What's up, everyone, and thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the Rams Wire Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron DeSilva. You can follow me on Twitter at CamDeSilva, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at the Rams Wire. Wish we were talking about different circumstances today, but coming out of Super Bowl 53, unfortunately, the Rams did come up short. On this episode, we're going to recap the game, talk about everything that happened, where the Rams failed, what happened with Jared Goff, what's going on with Todd Gurley, and what's next for the Rams heading into 2019. So there's plenty to get to. We're looking forward, also recapping the game, but this is not necessarily a huge setback for the Rams because it was a remarkable season. They went all in for 2018 and tried to get to the Super Bowl. They did exactly that. They held the Patriots to 13 points and somehow just couldn't muster enough on offense to get the job done and win a Super Bowl. Now they're looking ahead to 2019. They do have some questions to answer on both sides of the ball. But as far as I'm concerned, the core of this team is still very much intact, and there's really no reason to believe they can't make it back to the Super Bowl again next year. So we'll get right into it, talk about this game. It's going to be painful. It's going to be hard to listen to this, but we're going to have to talk about it and we'll get through it. So it was obviously a low scoring game, lowest scoring Super Bowl ever, second fewest points at halftime, the fewest points through three quarters. The Rams and Patriots couldn't do anything. It was both offensive struggles and defensive dominance, more so on the part of the Patriots owning the Rams. But it's just, it was a frustrating performance from Jared Goff and from the offense as a whole. It was especially bad in the first half. If you look at the numbers, the Rams were just terrible in the first 30 minutes of action. Gurley had 3 carries for 10 yards, Anderson 4 carries for 10 yards. Goff only completed 5 passes. In total, the Rams had 57 yards of offense, 2 first downs. They were 0 for 6 on third down. It was pathetic in the first half. And although their second half adjustments were better and they did perform better in the second half, it didn't get the job done. And they waited too long to get things going, and they came up short as a result. So it was a terrible performance from Jared Goff, from Todd Gurley. The offensive line didn't play well. And it's unfortunate because the defense played so very well against a Patriots offense that so few teams were able to even stop this season. In the first quarter, I mean, you had Littleton picking off Brady on Brady's first pass of the game. It was tipped by Roby Coleman. And then you have that penalty on Roby Coleman for hitting the running back, the defensive receiver, which was a questionable call. Obviously, it didn't result in any points on that drive, but the Rams could have had better field position, and it was just a terrible call. But that was kind of the way things went for the Rams. They didn't really catch any breaks. They didn't do themselves any favors, and no one's blaming the officials on this loss. Anyone who is, and any Rams fan who is saying the referees and the officials were to blame for the Rams losing this game, that's completely ludicrous. And although the officials made a few bad calls, they weren't the reason that the Rams lost. You're not going to win any games scoring 3 points. It's never happened in the postseason ever. No team has ever scored 3 points and won the game. So you just can't expect to beat the Patriots scoring 3 points, even if you only allow 13. Like Jared Goff said, if you were told that the Rams held the Patriots to 13 points and they still lost, you would wonder how that's even possible. But that's the way it went. So it was 3-0 at the half on Steven Gostkowski's 42-yard field goal in the second quarter. Zuerlein tied it up in the third quarter. And then really it was like that for a while until Sony Michel's touchdown run in the fourth. That even then, the game was still very much in hand for the Rams. Every time they touched the ball, up until that final drive, they had a chance to either tie the game or take the lead. Every single time they touched the ball, they had a chance to do that, and they failed every single time. They punted on their first eight possessions, first time that's ever happened in the Super Bowl. I mean, it's just maddening the way that this game went for them. And the Patriots were 3 for 12 on third down. The Rams were 3 for 13. So it's not like either team had success in that area of the game. It's just the Rams could do nothing offensively. Couldn't get into a rhythm, couldn't sustain drives, and it resulted in an ugly loss that the score, although 10 points is two possessions, it was really a close game the entire time. And like I said, the Rams had a chance to either tie it or take the lead every single time they touched the ball, except for that final drive after Gostkowski's 41-yard field goal to make it 13-3. There were a ton of missed opportunities for the Rams, whether you look at Brandon Cook's drop, I guess you could call it, on that deep pass down the middle. Of course, that was more of a miss on Goff's part, but Brandon Cook's got two hands on the football with both feet in bounds, and he couldn't come down with it. So that was a missed opportunity there. I know it's being said that the Patriots tried to fool the Rams in that on that play with that coverage and Jason McCourty coming over from his side of the field to break up the pass, but Belichick said it was a blown coverage and a bad call by the defense. And it was just a great play by McCourty to break up the pass and save a touchdown. If, at that point, the game would have been, I think it would have been 10-3 had Cooks come down with that pass, and instead the Patriots went up 10-3 a little bit later. Another opportunity you're looking at involving Cooks was with the pass before Goff's interception. Goff, one of his best throws of the night was that pass down the right sideline to Cooks. And although Gilmore was holding his left arm a little bit, so he kind of almost had to make a one-handed catch, it was just a good play by the corner. And then Daron Harmon coming over the top to jar the ball loose and force the incompletion. It was a subtle grab by Gilmore, and I mean, I guess you could call it pass interference, and had coaches been able to challenge it, it might have been overturned. But it was a smart play by a veteran receiver who knows that these officials are not gonna they're not gonna call these little ticky-tack fouls most likely in the Super Bowl, and in the way that the way that the game went late against the Patriots. They're not going to call that for pass interference, so Gilmore knows that, and he's going to go ahead and grab his arm a little bit. So had Brandon Cooks made that catch, it would have been a touchdown. And instead, Jared Goff throws an interception, and the Patriots come down and kick a field goal to make it 13-3. So instead of looking at 10-10, you're falling behind 13-3 and really putting the game out of reach. So that was a huge play in the game. And although it would have been a tough catch again for Cooks, you're a number one receiver, and that's a play that you probably should make. I'm not saying it would have been an easy grab, but you gotta at least try to get two hands on the football and fight through the contact from Gilmore. I know it could have been pass interference. I know it wouldn't have been an easy play, but that was a ball that was right in his lap, and it's one that he probably could have caught, and he said that he should have caught him. So it's not as if everyone's criticizing him for a play that he didn't think he could have made. And then a little bit earlier in the game, you had the holding on John Sullivan. I tweeted this out and did a post on six plays that kind of doomed the Rams. And rather than the Rams getting first and 10 on the Patriots side of the field, it was, I think it would have been at like the 43-yard line, something around there. It was first and 20 because of the hold. So that was a huge call. I don't personally think it was holding. People can agree with or disagree with me on Twitter and anything like that, but it was a ticky-tack call where I think it kind of changed the momentum of the game because the Rams wind up punting, and then on the ensuing drive, the Patriots go down and score a touchdown to make it 10-3. Again, I'm not making excuses. I'm not saying that the officials were to blame for this game and that they were the reason the Rams lost, but it was a notable call in the game that kind of changed the momentum for the Rams. And Sean McVay talked about it, where that was a momentum killer because you had Gurley ripping off a 13-yard run, and instead of being on the Patriots' side of the field and first and 10, you're looking at being at the 30 with first and 20. So that was a huge call in the game that kind of set the Rams offense back after it had just gotten a little bit of momentum. I think Cooks had like a 16-yard reception before that, then Gurley's 13-yard run. So they were starting to get into business offensively, and that hole just set them back a lot. Two other plays, Gronk's 29-yard catch down to the 2-yard line. Perfect throw from Brady, a great catch by Gronk. Not much you can really do about that. Littleton had pretty good coverage. Gronk just got his head turned around a little bit earlier, so he was able to see that the pass was inside instead of going to his outside shoulder, and he made a good diving grab going down to the ground. Peters almost came over and made a play on that ball after coming off of his quick hook route from his assignment. Would have been a great play, but he was just a little bit too late. And then finally, couple plays that really just put the game on ice were Sony Michel's 26-yard run, and then a few plays later, Rex Burkhead had a 26-yard run of his own. At that point, it was the Patriots' final drive where they had that final field goal to make it a 10-point game. And had they gotten a stop before that, they easily could have gotten the ball back. I mean, they almost got it back with it still being a 7-point game after getting that third down stop before the field goal. If Gostkowski misses that field goal, the Rams are taking over only down 7 points. So those runs were huge. The Rams still had a chance, especially after that holding call on the Patriots. The Rams still had a really good chance to come back and tie that game after Goff's interception, but those two long runs really just deflated the team and gave them no chance to win. So after going through all that, I know it was difficult. We're going to talk about something else that no one really has an answer to, and that, of course, is what is going on with Todd Gurley. I don't really know what is happening with the running back. I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know if he did something to tick McVay off. I don't know if it was just Sean McVay thinking that CJ Anderson was a better fit and that he could be more successful. Realistically, I don't know what was going on there. And I mean, the Rams keep saying he's healthy. He keeps saying he's healthy, and it just doesn't add up. You're in the Super Bowl, and you have the highest paid running back in the league who's supposedly, according to McVay, 100% healthy, and you get him 10 carries in the biggest game of the year against a defense that had all the success in the world shutting down the Patriots or the Rams passing attack and Jared Goff. So in a game where Goff had very little success, he threw it 38 times and Todd Gurley ran it 10 times. Obviously, the trend of teams having a better record when they run the ball more, that's obvious because when you're up, you're running the ball and you're killing the clock. But the Rams were 11-0 when Gurley had 15 carries or more this season. That's not a coincidence. He was the guy who made this offense go. He was the Offensive Player of the Year in 2017. He has the most touches, touchdowns, and scrimmage yards in the NFL since 2017. By every measure, he is the best offensive player on this team, and yet the Rams gave him 10 carries and threw the ball to him twice. That's not really acceptable. Sean McVay can talk all he wants about how it was a lack of opportunities from the offense, and the offense really just didn't get into a rhythm, and they weren't picking up third downs, this and that. It doesn't add up to me. Sony Michel, the Patriots only ran 8 more plays than the Rams did, and he had 18 carries for 94 yards and a touchdown. Rex Burkhead had 7 carries for 43 yards. I mean, they tried to get the running game going, and instead of the Rams doing the same in a game that was within one possession for 58 minutes, they only carried the ball 17 times with running backs. That to me doesn't make a lot of sense. And what's even worse is the fact that they only threw to tight ends and running backs six total times. Of Jared Goff's 38 pass attempts, only six went to running backs or tight ends. Gerald Everett was targeted once, Tyler Higbee zero times. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me. I don't know what exactly Sean McVay's plan was, but usually when you're getting pressure consistently on the quarterback, the best way for an offense to negate that and kind of take it away is to go with draws and screens and these quick passes to tight ends and checkdowns to running backs, just getting the ball into the playmakers' hands. And the Rams did none of that. I don't know if Gurley truly is hurt. Sean McVay said on Tuesday that he went through the kind of exit interview and physical and things like that, and he doesn't expect Gurley to need surgery, but that doesn't mean there isn't something wrong. I mean, he could just be dealing with soreness and having some discomfort in his knee. But, I mean, he was the fastest ball carrier in the game on Sunday. He hit 19.87 miles per hour, for those keeping track from next-gen stats. Against the Cowboys, he had his most runs where he hit 15 miles an hour of any game this season. It's just, by every measure, it seems like he was healthy, and yet the Rams treated him like he was just merely a change of pace back or a decoy or someone who was good in pass protection. It didn't make a lot of sense to me, and until Sean McVay says there was something wrong with his knee or anything to that nature, which of course is not going to happen because he said otherwise every time he's been asked about it, I'm just going to be baffled by the fact that Gurley only got 10 carries in the Super Bowl and 14 carries combined in the last two games of the year. Against the Saints, maybe you're looking at a situation where he was just out of a rhythm and not himself because of that drop that led to the interception, and then he had another drop on third down. Maybe McVay didn't feel comfortable or feel that it was Gurley's best night, and that's why he only got four carries. But, I mean, 14 carries in the last two games of the year for Gurley is just unacceptable to me. And I'm not really truly going to understand it until something comes out about that knee being injured or something otherwise happening between McVay and Gurley. I don't think that's going to happen again, but the situation between that and the fact that Gurley declined to speak to the media on Tuesday for his exit interview type thing where Sean McVay and Jared Goff both took the podium. Other players spoke at their lockers after cleaning out and heading home for the off season until spring workouts and everything happens again. Gurley declined to speak to the media. I can't really blame him because he is going to consistently get questions about his knee and what happened in the Super Bowl. But at the same time, you got to address this and kind of set the record straight, which I think he's tried to do by saying he's healthy. It just doesn't seem to add up for me, and I'm not really sure what happened there. Moving on to Jared Goff's performance, that's obviously been a talking point a lot for people who watch the game. 19 for 38, 229 yards, no touchdowns, an interception, and a 57.9 passer rating. Most of those yards, not most of them, but some of those yards came on the final drive where the Patriots were just playing prevent defense and allowing throws underneath to Brandon Cooks. I think he had 49 yards alone on that final drive. But it was just a shaky performance from Goff. It looked like the moment was too big for him and that he wasn't really prepared. He couldn't diagnose the defense. The Patriots supposedly sent two calls into the huddle on defense, and if Goff saw one thing, say he motioned a receiver across the formation and saw that it was man coverage, the Patriots would switch it up and go to a cover two look and take away those underneath throws where you're hoping to get kind of a pick on in man coverage, where they switched it up and went to zone, and that's not really going to help. There were times where Jared Goff, even at the end of the game, Jared Goff said they did run more zone than they expected after being a team that used man coverage more than any other team in the NFL this season. The Patriots switched it up and went to more of a zone-heavy defense and took away those throws against Goff, who was really excellent against man coverage this season. So That's not a coincidence. Bill Belichick knows what he's doing. He knows where a quarterback struggles, and he took advantage of it by going to more zone defense and making it difficult for the quarterback to have any success. There were a lot of missed opportunities for Goff. He opted to throw on that interception to Brandon Cooks instead of checking it down to Josh Reynolds, who was wide open on second down. He decided to throw it up to Brandon Cooks, who had a significant size disadvantage to Stephon Gilmore. Obviously, it was an interception. He was under pressure, but you got to look off your number one receiver sometimes and make the smart throw. It just seemed like Goff was trying to force the issue too much and trying to make throws that didn't necessarily need to be made at that moment. And instead of taking the easier throw, he tried to force it too much. That happened on an incompletion to Cooks on an intermediate corner route. He threw an incompletion. It was a decent throw, just a little bit too far inside, and it was broken up. And instead of that was on third down, and instead of checking it down to Josh Reynolds, who was coming across on the shallow crosser, it would have been an easy first down. He tried to force it to Cooks again. And then earlier in the game, instead of throwing it into the flat for Cooks, he kind of tried to squeeze it into a tight window to Robert Woods when Cooks was wide open in the flat after kind of a rub route where the defense got picked off by their own guys. Obviously, he was under pressure all game long. He took 12 hits. He got sacked 4 times, but he couldn't read the defense well enough to make those smart decisions where it's going to, you take the smart throw instead of trying to squeeze it into a tight window. I don't think it's an ego thing. I don't think he was trying to show everyone that he can make these throws. It was just a matter of not seeing the whole field and not seeing guys when they broke open. And then obviously you have that late throw to Cooks over the middle on that busted coverage. And to some extent, I understand why Goff missed him. It was kind of a blown coverage, and he admitted that he was surprised how well or how open Brandon Cooks was down the seam. And he was looking off the safety on the crosser to Robert Woods, and it kind of took him a second to see Cooks. But even after seeing him, he had plenty of time to fit a throw in there. And instead, he kind of threw up a duck, and Jason McCourty was able to come over and break up the pass, and really that was a game-changing play. Not the best performance again from Goff. He seemed really shaken up by it. He was disappointed in himself, and he promised to be better next time if the Rams do make it back to this game. But it was a missed opportunity for the young quarterback, and it's not a game he's soon going to forget. The same goes for Sean McVay, who I thought really had a shaky performance in the Super Bowl. He admitted he got outcoached by Belichick, and that was definitely the case. Like I said, the Patriots sent 2 calls into the huddle on defense, and if the Rams switch things up after that 15-second clock where Sean McVay can't talk to Goff anymore, the Patriots reorganized their defense, made a change, and switched up the look. Goff really struggled with those plays, and McVay didn't make enough adjustments to counteract what the Patriots were doing. Also, the Rams, the offense was just kind of stale, and Sean McVay stuck to his guns of being reliant on 11 personnel, going with one tight end and one running back in the field for almost the entire game. Instead of going with 2 tight ends and keeping one guy in to block and chip those pass rushers off of the edge, it would have helped Goff a lot, and it would have probably given him some easier throws and more time to sit in the pocket. But instead of doing that, McVay kind of got greedy, tried to block pass rushers with wide receivers on those tight splits, and it didn't work. There's little reason to kind of stick to what you're doing when it's not working. And although McVay, I'm not taking anything away from him, he's one of the best coaches in the league, and there's absolutely no reason to believe that he can't have success every single year in the NFL as long as he's with the Rams, but he does need to learn to make these adjustments when necessary when it comes to the offense and the defense is taking something away. You got to be smarter. You got to be willing to change. And it didn't seem like that was the case. Tight ends were only targeted once. That was Gerald Everett on a pass. He didn't catch it. It was incomplete. There were really no screen passes. The one that they threw to Brandon Cooks worked well, went for a big gain, even though it was almost a pick six. At least the Rams tried to get away from the pass rush with something like a screen and something like a quick pass like that. Also, his handling of Todd Gurley is, like I said, it doesn't make much sense to me. For him to only get 10 carries in the biggest game of the year when Jared Goff is struggling, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I'm not really sure what led him to think that going to kind of a shared backfield between Gurley and Anderson would be the best approach when really it only worked for one game against the Cowboys. Against the Saints, they were both shut down. Against the Patriots on Sunday, they really didn't have any success at all. So I'm not really sure what led him to believe that that would be the best approach, but clearly it wasn't, and the Rams paid for it, and they only scored 3 points. The defense, on the other hand, played extremely well. Littleton had 2 pass breakups. He had an interception. He made a couple of nice stops on third down to get the defense off the field. Mark Barron played pretty well, too. He got out of his gap one time that I really noticed on, I think it was Rex Burkhead's long run. Aqib Talib was right behind him, too. So it was 2 guys getting blocked by 1 offensive lineman, allowed that big run. So that was really one of his few mistakes. He also had a pass breakup. But the linebackers played well, and up until those 2 long runs by the Patriots, they really stifled the running game of New England and shut down the running backs for the most part, aside from a few plays. Marcus Peters played extremely well. He had that, obviously, he allowed that long, not deep pass, but he allowed that big play to Julian Edelman down near the Patriots' own end zone where he was in man coverage, came across the formation, and then Brady hit Edelman as soon as he broke open on that quick play. Peters was just out of position in man coverage, and he allowed the big catch. But other than that, he had a pass broken up and played really good coverage. I mean, Chris Hogan had 0 catches. Cordarrelle Patterson only had 2. Philip Dorsett wasn't even targeted. So it was a good job by him and by Aqib Talib, and they did a good job outside against the Patriots receivers. And really the biggest issue was Julian Edelman, who Nickell Robey-Coleman talked about. He talked about Brady. It was really him doing most of the damage in the passing game, and the Rams didn't have much of an answer. So they made the Rams pay and really picked them apart. And Julian Edelman was named the Super Bowl MVP as a result. So not a good performance necessarily by Robey-Coleman after talking himself up and saying that he really did need to have the best performance of his career, but that didn't happen. And the Patriots did a good job keeping the Rams pass rush in check. They only had 1 sack. It was by John Franklin Myers. Donald and Sue only hit Brady once each. There wasn't consistent enough pressure on Brady, which is the key to beating him. You're not necessarily going to... I mean, I know they locked down the Patriots offense and didn't allow much of anything, but only hitting Brady 4 times is not really going to get the job done in most games against the Patriots. But the defense played exceptional. Dante Fowler had 2 tackles for loss. He stepped up. It was just a matter of the offense not doing enough. So lessons to be learned, disappointing outcome to a great season, but the Rams have to move on, and they're going to look ahead to the offseason, which I'm going to do briefly right now and talk about some of the biggest free agents that they have to address. So obviously, you know, the big 4, I'm sure there are 4 free agents that the Rams are going to be looking at from their own team that they possibly want to re-sign or let walk in free agency. So you got Dante Fowler, you got Dominick Sue, LaMarcus Joyner, and Roger Saffold. Those are the 4 biggest names currently that the Rams are set to have hit free agency. Honestly, I don't think Joyner is going to be back. He just didn't do enough this season on the franchise tag to warrant a long-term contract. Yes, he was great in 2017, but making all that money, it was something like $11 million this year. He simply didn't have a good enough season, and the Rams have never been ones to really pay defensive backs huge contracts. We saw it with Trumaine Johnson, T.J. McDonald, Rodney McLeod, Janoris Jenkins. So these defensive backs typically don't get big contracts from the Rams, and I would expect the same to happen for Joyner. He'll probably leave in free agency, meaning the Rams have to replace him either in the draft or in free agency. Hello, Earl Thomas. I know you're probably not listening, but the Rams could use you if Joyner leaves. But he's definitely someone that I'm probably you're probably gonna see the Rams replace in free agency or in the draft. Fowler, after trading that third round pick for him, I would expect the Rams to make a strong push to bring him back. He played well down the stretch, played well in the postseason. I would expect the Rams to either franchise tag him and kind of take the same approach that they did with Joyner and see if he could do it for an entire season, or simply try to get him on a long-term contract, depending on what he gets from other offers from other teams this offseason. And then you got Sue and Saffold. Saffold is someone who has expressed an interest in possibly coming back on a hometown discount to stay with the Rams. I wouldn't be surprised if he is back. He's played really well the past couple of years at left guard next to Whitworth and Sullivan. Hopefully Sullivan and Whitworth are both going to be back and not retire. But having Saffold there is going to be huge too. He'll be 31 in June, so he's not necessarily the youngest offensive lineman, but the Rams already addressed the youth at left tackle and at center with Brian Allen and Joseph Noteboom in the draft last year. So there's not really a huge need at offensive line unless both Whitworth and Sullivan retire, and then you got Saffold leaving, which I can't see all three happening. Sue, he's really only going to come back, I would assume, if he takes a discount to stay with the Rams. He already said that he took significantly less money from the Rams and turned down more money from two other teams in free agency last year. So there's not going to be a shortage of interest in him. And you could see a team like possibly the Saints who were in on him. The Raiders were interested last year. You could see a team like that come in and offer him a long-term contract, 3 or 4 years to finally round out his career and pay him north of, say, $10 million a year. So I don't think the Rams are going to match anything like that. But if he wants to come back for one more year, I say why not, because he played well down the stretch. And although he didn't have his best season overall, he clearly had an impact on the game in the playoffs. So he's someone that the Rams have to look at. But for now, those are really the only free agents I'm looking at for this episode of the podcast. We'll have more episodes down the line, of course, before free agency. Break down some targets of the Rams, guys that are going to hit free agency that are their own players who they might want to bring back, and talk about the draft, obviously. That's coming up in April, so we got a little bit of time. Like Belichick said, we're 5 weeks behind everyone else, so we're going to have to catch up and talk about these prospects, what the Rams might address. I can tell you right now that some of their biggest holes are on defense, where you might need a new linebacker if Barron leaves. You might need a new safety, a new nose tackle. What's going to happen with Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib? Rams can move on from both of them. So we'll talk about that more in depth down the line as this offseason moves on and as we move closer to free agency and the draft. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Thank you guys again for tuning in. I know it was a disappointing end to the season, but the Rams really had a tremendous 2018 year. And I mean, even to make it to the Super Bowl after what they went through 2 years ago under Jeff Fisher, it's a remarkable turnaround, and there's no reason to believe that they can't be back next year. So we'll talk to you guys in a little while. Thanks again for tuning in. Follow me on Twitter at Cam DeSilva. Follow us on Twitter at The Rams Wire. And be sure to check out theramswire.usatoday.com.